Hey, everyone out there in podcast land. Thanks again for listening to the FT After Hours podcast. If it wasn't for you guys, we wouldn't be doing this. And so far, we've really been enjoying it. So one thing I keep forgetting to mention, I wanted to throw it out there. That way you guys know, last couple weeks, I keep forgetting. Austin has us set up for voicemails now. So if you want to leave us a voicemail, it's pretty simple. You just want to go to flighttest.com, click on the podcast icon, scroll down somewhere, probably, I think it's in the middle of the page. There should be a little blue icon that says leave a voice message. If you click on that, leave us a message. We'd love to hear from you. And hopefully we get enough of them and we can play them on the show. So just wanted to throw that out there. Make sure you guys know about it now. So please leave us a voicemail. We'd love to hear from you. Keep the emails and the tweets coming. I love to hear from you guys. So I'm enjoying it. Real quick, just to let you know about this podcast. Last couple of weeks, there's been a lot of products come out. So we kind of, I have couple other podcasts already queued up and ready to go, but with a bunch of new products coming out, I wanted to get them out there and just let you guys know a little bit about them. So there was a bunch coming out from Horizon Hobby. Hobby King had a bunch of stuff coming out, a few things from Great Plains and FMS. So we wanted to get them out there and let you know what's coming out or what is out there now. The other thing is, you know, the hot topic everybody's been discussing, and I wanted to get it out there also, is with the FAA and the flying FPV. And it was really good because we had myself, Wayne, Pat, and Mike in here, and it was good because with Pat being in the aviation industry, we got to see, now, you know, Pat's on our side and he agrees with everything, but it was really cool for Pat to play devil's advocate and put him in this perspective of the FAA and what their thinking is on this and why they're doing the things they are and this and that. So that was pretty interesting, and I'll just let you listen to it and I'll quit rambling on. So sit back, relax, and here we go. Guys, welcome. We're back for another episode of FT After Hours in the studio here at the Flight Test headquarters. And today we got a full house in the studio with me today. I got Wayne Griffith.
Hey, guys.
I got Mike Coolins.
Hello.
And Pat Humbert's in the house again.
Hello, hello.
What's going on, guys? How's everybody doing
real
today?
Real good?
Nice. All right.
Weather.
I'm excited, man. We haven't had a full house in this studio for quite a while. So, everybody doing any flying or anything? How about you, Mike? What's going on? I know you've been working on that quadcopter and everything.
Yeah, I got the H-Quad done with FPV, and actually, I was over at Chad Capper's house, and he helped me finalize some settings. I had the gains up too high, and it was causing some shakiness, so he got that in order for me, and I had fun flying that FPV. So.
Yeah, so you've been cranking that thing around.
Yeah,
now, huh?
I did it at my house, and then I did it at work a little bit, showed the guys at work, and they were intrigued by it. And
yeah.
Hit my bush at my house, took some leaves off real quick with it. Actually, Chad actually wrecked it. He lost signal with it, knocked off two of the landing gear and broke two props, but since he fixed it, it's all good. I don't know hardship there.
Oh, that's funny. Wayne and I popped out, when was that? Saturday, Friday? I don't remember. Saturday, yeah, briefly, yeah, for, yeah, just a little,
yeah,
bit.
Saturday.
And we were going to try some towing, so we pulled out the big carbon cub and brought out the KA8, and I think that lasted all of, what, probably 20 seconds, not even 20
not
seconds,
even, yep.
10 seconds.
Oh, wow.
We realized real quick the grass was probably, I don't know, 6 inches or so, and, you know, that carbon cub's got so much power. And I eased into it, but it just took that KA8, and it just went up on its nose and over in for in, wing over wing, and, I mean, before I could even get the throttle down, that thing was toasted. So Wayne's got to do a little repairs, and then I think we might try to go down to Austin's dad's house or something and see if we can, you know, get a little bit shorter grass or get it out on the runway, because we got to get our towing down, Wayne, for flight tests. So, so we're hoping some guys are going to bring some gliders out and we can get
flight
them
fest, right?
Yeah, flight fest. Flight fest. Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I can't wait.
It's coming up quick. I'm telling you,
all my planes in order and getting some LEDs lit up on my Spitfire and trying to get more comfortable with the Spitfire, because I'm really looking forward to that.
You going
to
enter into the combat?
I would like to. I got to get a plane ready. You had some good ideas that I'm eager to try on maybe my Tech Sumo.
Yeah, so. I might have to build a wing and get it all done up and laminated and strengthened
up. Running out of time. I know. I'm like putting hours into my FT Vig and I have so many things going on. It's like I can't. It's like I only put a few hours in. Next thing I know, it's 2 or 3 in the morning and I got to work the next day. I'm like, this is crazy.
I know. We got to work on my UFO. We got to get those lights going and get the Arduino board. And I mean, the UFO is good. And then we got to try to build G1. And
yeah, I just don't see me having the time to do that.
I know. It's just we're crazy busy and everything going on. But it's going to be fun. Can't wait. It's coming up quick, guys. So can't wait to get that thing going. All right. Hey, let's touch on some emails here real quick. Got a bunch of them in here. And one thing I was going to start off with is, as you guys know, we were talking about gathering up everybody's stories of their crashes, and everybody's been emailing me and everything. But I think what we might do, and if you guys like this, we'll keep doing it, is maybe read 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 or whatever during each episode, because I've been getting a bunch in and reading them. Some of them are really funny, but I thought if we just share it. And Kevin Teschner, he's a guy, he's emailed me a couple times, and we met him at NEF, and he thought maybe we'd have a little something each podcast, like dumb things that happen or whatever, and we can read a few emails and see how that goes. So I think we'll start off with him, because it's funny, and we used to see this all the time with Bixler, and he got a made a P-51 out of a Dollar Tree foam, and it was just a profile, he said, and he got it all together and he charged his batteries and he went out to the field. He says he took a deep breath, he chucked it in the air, he had a cheap Chinese radio, no exponential, didn't know what rates were or nothing. He said he was a complete noob at the time. Chucked it in the air. He said it flew for about 20 seconds, lost control of it, wedged in a tree, and I kind of know where this is going because I've been there a million times. He started climbing the tree and thought, you know what, if I'm going to die falling out of a tree over a $3 airplane, I don't think that's worth it. So eventually he got it out, and when he got it home, he found out that all his servo horn screws were still in the little tray on the table.
Oh, wow.
And how many times, Wayne, for a fact that we were out flying, and Bixler's done that a million times.
Yeah. More than once.
So it's just funny, like, how many things you go through over the course of the years of the stupid things you do, and sometimes it works out. You're like, wow, I just can't believe, that plane stayed intact, and then other times, obviously, Murphy's Law comes in, and you know what happens after that. Another one, too, Stefan Seifert had one. Same kind of deal. It's kind of beginning of the year. Grabbed his Bixler and went out and didn't put the carbon rod in the center. Didn't realize it, at first. And he's up there cranking around going, man, look at these wings are really flexy. This is really... And then, boom, right that last instant, you're like, oh, no, I forgot the carbon rod. And, well, guess what? The old Bixler folded up in two, and down to the ground it went. So that was another funny story. That
when we flew last at Jackson or whatever, I forgot my transmitter. I was so gung-ho that I had all my planes in the vehicle ready to go and get there and no transmitter. I'm like, man, I never did that one before. I felt like I couldn't believe it.
I've just been
like,
there.
I cannot believe I did it, because I go out to Chad's all the time. Yep. Never forget my transmitter.
I forgot my transmitter. I forgot the carbon rod for the radian a couple times. I mean, I forgot batteries.
Oh, man.
I've done it a million times, so it's not a big deal. Hey, one story. Let me see if I can find it here real quick. This one is really funny. This was from Davis Walmsley, and this one's really funny because he was a noob and belonged to a club, and he went out and bought a cheap foam Cessna 182 from Hobby King, which later on he says, I wish I didn't, because it was terrible. And he said the guys at the club joked about it at the airfield that it was afraid of heights because they could barely get off the ground. So he gave it to one guy. He had like 40 years flying experience, and he got it in the air, and they were up about 200 feet, and handed him the transmitter. And he said, as soon as I got the transmitter, the wing popped off, pulled out the receiver, which for some reason made the plane lock into full throttle, went straight into the ground like a missile, and he said the thing completely exploded, and there was just pieces of foam everywhere. He said the pilot felt so bad, he was just going to buy me a new plane. He said, don't worry about it. So it was one experience he had, you know, buying a cheap, you know, plane that they didn't know anything about. And, you know, being new, that's always usually devastating, you know, when that happens. So, another, let me see if I can find this one real quick. Another story from Dan Hargis. Let me see if I can pull that up real quick. This one's really good, too, because I don't think I've ever heard of anything like this. Back when he was about 15 years old in high school, he went vacationing with his parents and his family up in Vermont. And he said, like, being an RC enthusiast, he thought, hey, you know what, I'm going to bring some RC airplanes with me, you know, on vacation, just like usually, you know, we all do. He was all excited and everything. And the one thing he was flying was a Great Plains 40 size Piper Cub. And he just outfitted it with a set of balsa floats. So that's a pretty good size airplane, you know, to start with. So he said after about 3 days in the vacation, and he was rotating through some of his vehicles, they went out on his buddy's boat, and they decided to fly the Cub while they were out on a 13-foot Boston Whaler, which sounds pretty cool. You know, you get out there with the boat and the plane's, you know, cruising along beside you. I'm like, oh, man, that sounds really cool. Hmm. Well, here's what happened, though. At first it was a great idea. They fired up the Cub, hopped in the boat, and after taking off, he said they got up to about 20 miles an hour, started cruising around, and he said, I sat in the bow, got the plane off the ground, and he said it was a total blast. Everything was going good. They were doing slow banking turns off the front of the bow. He's like, man, this is great. Best day ever. Well, what happened was he was doing a few touch and goes and didn't realize that one of the floats had a small little leak in it.
Ooh.
So every time he kept going, them touch and goes, that one float kept filling up with water. So you guys can see where this is going. Eventually it started changing the CG, and he said after about 20 minutes into the flight, they decided they were going to start heading back to the dock. He noticed that he started to lose a little bit of airspeed, and he said all of a sudden the nose pitched down, and the water in the left float came rushing forward, and the Cub went into a steep dive. Well, in an attempt to save his friend from an uncomfortable haircut, he said he pulled up and banked hard, and somehow the Cub tip-stalled and went right in the back of the boat, right behind his buddy, between him and the motor, and just stopped right there. And his buddy didn't even realize what happened until he turned around and seen the Cub there, and he's like, well, that's a crazy landing, you know, did you mean to do that? You know, he didn't want to tell him what was going on, freak him out. So eventually they made it back in shore, and everybody was like, oh man, that was the best landing we ever seen, you're a great pilot, you know. But what are the odds in that?
Oh,
you know,
man, he lucked out.
I mean, I never heard of a story like
where
that
it's luck
before.
Yeah, I had a good positive end.
That's
good.
Crazy
Polish water bomber.
Oh my gosh. That's probably one of the craziest stories I've ever heard. I got an email from they call him Big Sam Reese from Australia, and he was telling me, I don't know, we were talking about how we like to go left more than right, and he says down in Australia and flying mode one, they like to go right instead of left. So I don't know if that's a thing in Australia, you know, how like they say the water in the toilet bowl goes this way here, yeah, and Australia, yes, goes the other
southern
way,
southern hemisphere,
yeah, yeah. So I don't know, maybe it's just a thing down there. But actually I got quite a few emails about that, and it was funny because actually a lot of left-handers said that they like to go right more than left. So I don't know if we're on the summer, this is just crazy nonsense. I don't know. Oh, the other thing I wanted to mention, let me find it here real quick. Bear with me. I got an email from Luke. He's 14 years old. And the reason I'm bringing this up, I know Bixler and him were talking about lipos and having fires and everything. Well, poor Luke built a plane and was doing a little modifying on it, and he had to cut a piece of the plane off, and he had the battery in it.
Ooh.
And as he was cutting through there, he didn't realize it. He cut into the battery. Yeah. And naturally, as soon as he got into that battery, mm-hmm. the thing just burst into flames. And he goes, sure. Here I am, you know, down in the basement. This thing's on fire and in flames, and I'm running out to trying to get it, you know, out the door, and his mom's yelling at him, what are you doing down here? Are you doing one of your dumb experiments again? You know, she had no clue what was going on, and luckily he got it out of the house and he got it put out. But still, you know, that's just another example.
I have a lot of puffy batteries, and I'm wondering how puffy get away with.
That's true. Some of them you got to really watch.
I balance charge them all the time, but still,
it's just the nature of the beast. Once you get so many cycles on, and speaking of that, the battery you gave me, Pat, I'm throw it away.
Yeah.
It's no good. That thing, nothing even registered when I plugged it in.
Well, that's what it was in my charger. It just wasn't showing anything.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, boy.
Give it another shot. No, I plugged it in. Nothing
even
registered.
What size battery was that?
1,800? Yeah.
Three cell.
Okay. That thing looked pretty old, too. How long have you had that battery? 4 or 5 years?
Which one was that, do you know?
I think it was the one of the original Park Zone 1800s, I think.
The green one?
Yeah. So it looked pretty old.
Hard to say. I mean, you know, I'm surprised it was even the state it was. It wasn't all puffed up.
No, it wasn't. That was a weird thing. It wasn't puffed up or anything. But I
had it sitting in the garage all winter long. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's toast. I'll chuck it out the window for you, or shoot it with a gun and make it explode, or do something with it. No, I'm just kidding.
Throw in the pond.
So, hey, let's. Anything else? Anybody? Any other funny stories? You got any? You didn't crash anything, Mike?
Other than the H quad Chad brought down because he lost signal. So, and I. Other than that, I've been trying to keep my planes as pristine as possible for Flight Fest. I'm trying to get them all in order. So
you can go crash them there.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. At least I'll have witnesses and they can enjoy it, I guess. At that point.
Well, let's move on a little bit. I don't know what's going on, but there is a ton of products that have come out here in the last probably 2 or 3 weeks. I wanted to brief over some of them. Some of them are really cool. Some of them, you know, just news, and just wanted to mention them, and we'll talk a little bit about them. I think first thing, though, we'll start with Horizon. We'll run down through their list. The first thing I had on there, Wayne, if you wanted to pull it up, and maybe we can get the specs on it, why I talk about it a little bit. They got a new kind of small glider called the Agio, I believe it's pronounced. I could be wrong on that. It's a 280 size bind and fly or plug and fly glider. And it's got the, I believe it has the AS3X built in it. It's $179. Let's see if we can find the specs on it. I believe it's like a 50 or 51 inch wingspan. Thing only weighs, I think, 12.5 ounces, something like that. But it looks like a cool new glider. It's got ailerons, elevator, rudder. Runs off of a small, let's see, 3-cell, I want to say 480 or 500 milliamp batteries. That sound right, Wayne?
Yeah, 3-amp, 450.
I kind of liked it. At first, I was like, eh, but the more I look at it, it looks like something you could just keep in your car, you know, just because of the size of it. And even if it's windy, I think that plane's going to be able to handle some pretty good wind. So you could just leave it in your car and, you know, take it out and do some gliding. Watching the video, you know, it did aerobatics really well and inverted and everything. And it's just kind of a cool size.
Looks like a real straight wing on it.
It is.
There's no dihedral.
Yeah, no. It's a straight wing, and it's got ailerons on it, so it's going to be pretty maneuverable. And again, I you know, what do you guys think looking at it?
Looks like a U-2 spy plane, kind of the fuselage and the straight.
Yeah, you know
straight
what?
Wing.
You're right. It does
just
kind of
straight with a straight wing. It
right,
does.
Right, and how it tapers at the end, like
right,
yeah,
right, right.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't think of that, but it looks like a pretty cool little glider. I think that looks like something Wayne might like too, because you really liked your Kinetic.
Yeah.
When you had it and flew the daylights out of that, so you know you got something like this that I think's probably right on the same weight range, but it actually has a bigger wingspan, so you can still have fun with it and do your loops and rolls and inverted and stuff. But I think even on a good windy day, that thing ought to float around pretty good. What do you guys think?
Probably with that straight wing.
Yeah. You like it, Mike?
They showed an inverted image of it, so it must do inverted pretty well, I think.
I don't see why it shouldn't have no problem flying inverted, but it's a neat-looking airplane. I like the paint scheme on it. So, the other thing they did, too, I'll mention real quick. I'm not going to go into detail because it's been out for a while, but they had the Ultramicro F4U that's been out probably for at least a year, maybe almost 2 years, but they rebandaged it a little bit, and they put the AS3X receiver in it, changed around a little bit of the paint scheme, and then I believe they put a three-bladed prop on it. Yeah. So nothing really new there, except it's got the AS3X, which, you know, really helps them Ultramicros fly around in the wind. So if you guys wanted to check that out. Hobby Zone's got the new F4U Corsair. Now, this is something I want to touch on and talk a little bit about. I did a little reading and research on this, and I think even Matt Andron commented on RC Groups a little bit about it. Now, I know, Pat, you know, I had the original F4 Corsair from Park Zone.
Yeah.
Now, that plane was phenomenal. Flew unbelievable. It was so steady. It had a very light wing loading. It floated. I did upgrade the motor on it. Made it a little faster and just had a little bit more fun on. Actually, it was one of my favorite planes, and that's the one where I kept beefing it up and beefing it up, and eventually I blew the wings off.
It was a sharp-looking airplane.
Right, really.
It was nice.
Yeah. So what they did, or what they kind of found out, well, let me back up a little bit. So that one went away, and Park Zone kind of stepped it up a little bit, and they brought out a new F4U Corsair, which is what I have now. And it's way beefier, heavier. It's got the working flaps and the retractable gear and everything. And don't get me wrong, thing flies nice. It's a great airplane. But I did kind of miss that, just that very, you know, I pulled the gear off my original F4U. It was just a hand launch, you know, and it was just fun to fly. So what they did is they took that same design in this airplane, beefed it up a little bit. They did beef up the wing. I think they might change the motor mount a little bit. I'm not positive on that, but they just made it more structural sound, I guess you could say. But same flying characteristics. It's the same light wing loading. So now you take that awesome airplane that they had and you put in the AS3X and the SAFE technology. Now you have a Warbird. And Mike, I want to ask you this here too. Like, if you were like me when I first got in, that's the first thing I wanted to get was a Warbird.
Yes, I was the same way.
You know, but trying to fly them, as
Yeah, they're not a beginner plane.
No, absolutely.
At all.
Absolutely not.
And maybe with the SAFE thing, it's going to make it more of a beginner.
And even you know, Pat, like when we were going from our Super Cub just to the T-28 Trojan, that was kind of a big step. That plane was way faster, kind of got out of hand way quicker. And I know me and you have buried them things into the ground a few times, whether we just got disoriented.
Right.
So now, Pat, you got this Warbird that has the, you know, the SAFE mode on it. So you get out there, you hand launch the thing, take off, and you get all screwed up. Boom, you hit the button and this thing's flying perfect. And correct me if I'm wrong, Wayne, if you can glance through there, I think it has the three modes on there too, where you have the beginner, intermediate, and expert modes, I think. So if that's the case,
You can learn as you go.
Exactly. Start off in beginner and, you know, learn through the process, go to intermediate, right through to expert.
I know with Warbirds, I tip stall them horribly. I don't know if that's characteristic of most of them or not, but boy,
they can
more
be.
Rudder, more slower on the turn.
Right.
I found out real quick.
Right. And, you know, and generally, if you do stall Warbird, that's the first thing. It's going to dip a wing and you're going down. So I think this thing's tremendous. You know, they've got the Apprentice S out, and the Delta, you know, Hobby Zone's got the Delta Ray and everything. So this being able to get your first Warbird out there, you know, to start with and train on,
I think
it's phenomenal. What do you think there, Pat?
Yeah, I think that's great. I don't know if that would help me much. I mean, I'm waiting for the technology to come out that keeps the airplane away from light poles, trees, rooftops, you know.
Okay, you have a point. I'm not going to argue with you
like
on
the
that.
Cars
I mean,
that
once I'm up there, once I'm up there, I'm not that bad, but it's kind of the precision flying that gets me, and I don't think there's anything out there right now that's going to help me with that, other than a
destined GPS coordinate routers.
I guess the best thing for me is just a bottle of glue.
Maybe we should get you a quadcopter, you know, with GPS on. We'll just set waypoints for you.
Yeah. Go pick up cheese balls.
Yeah, there you go. So Wayne's got a picture of it up there. They did change the scheme of it, but, you know, it's got the removable gear. It's hand launchable. It's just like their older original Park Zone version there.
And did you know the original Warbird was, a lot of those were made just right up the road here?
Yeah, Goodyear. Yeah, I did know
that.
Not
all of them, but quite a few of them.
Right, yeah. So it's a good-looking airplane. I think a lot of people are going to jump on this. And I'll tell you what, I'll be honest with you. I'll talk a little bit. I've been doing quite a bit of training here lately. And believe it or not, I've been doing a lot of it off of the Hobby Zone Delta Ray.
You had some interesting stories we were sharing before.
Yeah, maybe I'll talk a little bit about that. But, you know, a lot of the guys, you know, they looked at that and they're like, it doesn't look like a regular airplane, you know. And I had the Apprentice S2, and a lot of them were kind of, you know, gushing over that thing. But I wanted to, yeah.
This would entice beginners.
Exactly.
There's no doubt about it.
Exactly. You know,
and I'm meaning the
F4U. Yes. Yeah, it's beautiful looking. You know, when people see that Warbird, they're like, oh, man, you know, I really want to fly. I've had numerous, you know, friends of mine, they've seen me flying the Warbirds and stuff, and they, you know, oh, can I try it? I'm like, no way. No way.
Exactly.
But, you know, if I had this in my fleet, you know, and I pull this out, and they're like, can I fly that? I'm like, absolutely.
Yeah, with the safe.
You know, and that was a cool thing with the Delta Ray, Pat. You know, a lot of the stuff we've let people try with the buddy cords, you know, and you know, it's got the same features as the Delta Ray, the F4U. So, Pat, I've just been taking my transmitter, giving it up to them, and say, okay, hit the throttle, and launching it. And I mean, honestly, they're just cranking around. They're cruising around. No problem in beginner mode, because obviously when you let go of the sticks, it self-rights. You know, it's not letting them bank up or down or left or right more than 10 degrees. And they're flying no problem, you know. Yeah. And even coming back, they realize real quick, you know, they're trying to turn one way in the backwards direction. They don't get it. They let off the sticks. The thing self-rights, and then they're going the other way. I mean, they picked up on it so quick.
That's amazing.
Most of them really didn't even use a panic button. The only times they were really using the panic button was on the takeoff and the landing. I just have them cut the throttle, hold the panic button down, and they were just gliding right in, you know, no problem. So I think that Warbird would just be phenomenal, you know, teaching somebody.
I do too.
So they got a let's see here, what else can we do? Let me think. Hangar 9, that's what I want to talk about. Hangar 9's finally released their new big P-51 Mustang. If you guys haven't seen this thing, I know Wayne and I seen it up at the Toledo show. They had it out front on display, and it is beautiful, absolutely beautiful. It's a bit pricey. I think it's like starts at $849 without no motor or servos or anything like that. But the thing is gorgeous, and it takes the new Evolution 60cc motor with the fuel injection in it. So no more, you know, carburetor, no more messing with tools or anything like that. So the thing's just beautiful. There's a picture of it. Wayne's got it pulled up there. You know, you can put the retracts on it, full flaps. I mean, it's got a lot of detail in it. It really, for the price, you know, it's not that bad, but it's a beautiful looking airplane.
Yeah.
I would love to fly something like that. I'd probably be nervous, though. Last thing, I think they got, might have been out maybe for a week or so now, too. And Mike, you might have seen spark your interest on this, is they came out with the new Blade 200 SR quadcopter. Have you seen that?
No, I have not.
Well, you know, they got the big one out. Well, they make like an intermediate size now. It's a 200 size, but it has a safe technology and it's ready to fly if you want it. And watching the videos, the thing looks pretty good. It's pretty fast. So that's out, and I think that might be roughly it for the Horizon stuff. Now, that's a helicopter there. While you're on there, Wayne, you can stay right on there. We'll talk a little bit about the some Great Plains stuff I seen coming out. Might even be on the new items page there. One thing that looked pretty cool, they had a P6E Hawk, electric power. I believe it was Balsa. Starts out about $249. And it's a pretty good-looking airplane. And Great, you know, Great Plains makes some pretty cool stuff. So that was one thing they had coming out. The other thing I finally seen, Wayne, and we also looked at that at the Toledo show. They have the new, I don't know exactly how you say it. I want to say Kunai. It's K-U-N-A-I, Kunai, 1.4-meter sport glider. And that thing's kind of looks like the rifle, but it's a little bit bigger, and I believe it's probably pretty fast. Let's see. It comes with the motor. If you get it just... let's see, motor and servos and everything, it's $129, and if you want to get it ready to go with the except for the receiver, it's only $199. I think that is a really, really good price. You see it in there anywhere, Wayne?
Who makes it?
Great Plains.
Oh, okay.
It should be in the new items page.
I'll
I believe
that the dog is it Adagio?
Yeah,
boy, that it does look really nice.
That
I
is
will
a
say
yeah.
That. I mean, the color scheme and everything. Yep. It's a pretty nice looking glider.
I don't see it on that page either. Do you? Oh well. All right. The other thing they got coming out for Great Plains is they finally, I believe, released their Giant Scale Zero. And again, this is one of them giant scale warbirds that, you know, looking at it, it's phenomenal. And it runs off of a 50 to 55 gas engine. And that thing really is only, let's see, like $750, something like that to start out with. So that's a pretty good deal. Hey, did any of you guys see, I think I seen it on RC Groups, Real Flight, you guys have all, you know, heard of Real Flight or used Real Flight here at Flight Test, the flight simulator. They now have a mobile simulator out for your phone or your iPad.
Oh, yeah.
And I haven't tried it yet. I've been wanting to download it, but I heard it's really good. So that might be something you guys want to check out. Oh, one other thing, Wayne, if you can find it on that, I believe it's there, but if you don't, no big deal. I'll just talk about it real quick. FMS finally released that, it's an odd version, like 890 millimeter Warbird series, and they're starting out with the P-47, but what this is a high performance, high speed Warbird. Runs off of a four cell. I think it's got, you know, the big four-bladed prop on there, but it's fast. I mean, this thing's built like a tank. It's got retracts, and I believe it has flaps on it. But, I mean, this thing is built like a tank. Again, we seen it up in Toledo, and we were checking it out. But the thing is unbelievable, and it's probably – it's an oddball size, but I believe it's going to be one of the first, like, powerful, you know, fast, you know, able to take it, you know, Warbirds that you can go out and just crank around on a four-cell. So – they got that should be coming out. Also, they've redone a couple of their older planes. In their 1700 millimeter series, they come out with a new F4U V2 version. That's coming out. And they also redid the FW190 in the 1400 millimeter series. They did some changes on that, and they got a different paint scheme on that. And for those of you out there, if you love Warbirds, I think FMS has probably the best. Now I'm talking foam wise. I think they have some of the best foam Warbirds out there out of anybody. They're really good quality. The price is really good. The detailing on it is phenomenal. You can get parts for them. I know Diamond Hobby is a fairly new distributor here in the United States, and they carry all their parts and all their airplanes. But if you're into Warbirds, check them out. Their planes are absolutely phenomenal. So I think that's it for those guys. Let's move on to Hobby King. Now, Hobby, I'm telling you what, it seems like you can go on Hobby King's new items page daily, and there's so much stuff on there. Let's see. Let's start off, though. I don't know if you guys have seen this. It's called the First Star 200, and what it really looks like, it's an EPO. It looks like a mini glider. It looks just like a miniature, you know, Bixler is what I want to say, and it's pretty little. I'm guessing I'm not exactly sure what the size of it is. Maybe Wayne can pull that up while we're looking. But it's a neat little glider. It's, again, it's just something you probably keep in your car all the time. You know, if you wanted to stop off and run a couple batteries through anything, it's a neat little glider.
Which one is it?
It's called the First Star 200 EPO Mini Glider.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, there it is. Now, if you're looking at that thing, looks like just like a mini Bixler, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, because the push prop.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, like exactly, that. Exactly. And what's the size on that, Wayne? What's it say?
Wingspan 758 millimeter.
Okay, so it's really small. And what kind of, let's see, 10 amp mm-hmm. ESC? Let's see, what kind of battery does it fly off? Two cell what?
Two cell 500 to 1,000.
Oh, no kidding! Mm-hmm. Wow, you can put 1,000 milliamp. Wow, that's pretty good. So again, that just looks like something fun you could just keep in your car all the time, and you know, anywhere you want to go, pull it out and crank it around, and it's cheap too. What's the price on it? $55.
Yep.
It's hard to buy something for 55 bucks, you know, just to pull out and crank around. So it's a neat little glider. The other thing I want to talk about, they finally released the Bushmaster. Now, have you guys seen the Bushmaster at all?
No.
How about, have you guys seen a Fun Cub?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. This thing, I was amazed when they finally released this. This thing is almost identical to the Fun Cub. And right down to how the hatch comes off in the nose. Now, it doesn't have the big funky tires like the Fun Cub, but other than that, this thing looks identical to a Fun Cub, the flaps and everything. But here's what's interesting about that. They have this one running off of a four cell, and I'm not really sure why. I watched some videos and stuff, and it didn't look like it was overpowered or flying really fast, because the regular Fun Cub only runs off of a three cell 2200. You know, it's got a 12x6 prop on it, and you know, it'll do vertical, and it's got plenty of power. So I was kind of really surprised at this, you know, why this thing's running off of a four cell. But it's pretty neat looking. Again, what's the price on that thing, Wayne? It's $138. So that's a pretty good price with that. So if you're kind of up in the air and not sure, this wouldn't be the one to get, I think.
Now, it does say here, the 3S 3000 milliamp works very well as a low power setup.
That's kind of surprising, though. Because like I said, watching the videos with the 4 cell, it was like, eh. I mean, it had some power, but I didn't see where it was, you know, overly powered, which was kind of surprising. But it's a neat looking airplane.
I know with my Cub, I need more power.
For which one?
Super Cub, I think it was.
Yeah.
I can't remember. I got it at the AeroTech.
Oh, now, okay.
But I can't remember much. But it was way underpowered, and I was, it was a nightmare. And you don't think of a Cub as being a nightmare. I think I brought it up in our last podcast.
Yeah. So that was a little different. Oh, hey, while you're right there, too, Wayne, they come out with, was it three different, you know, these 250 size quads are just blowing up everywhere. Everybody's trying to get them out, and you know, and everything. And I know me and Wayne have been looking at them to build a 250 size quad to crank. Jeez, a whisk. Blah, blah, blah. Try to crank around. And Hobby King just come out with three new 250 size frames. And one of them, I believe, is foldable. And they're super cheap. They're like anywhere from $19 to $22. You know, and if you're just going to go out and crank around and, you know, maybe crash or something, you know, $20, what's that, you know? And they look pretty.
Price is coming down.
Yeah, and that one, there's the foldable one. That's pretty interesting. Now, that last one you had up there looked like it had some pretty beefy arms on it, that other one. And looks like it might take some damage. Yeah, that one there. That is the, it's called a what?
FPV 250LH.
Low hung, clean and dirty.
They have the craziest names. The low hung, clean and dirty 250 quad. Jeez, Lewis. But that one looks pretty beefy. It's got some heavy duty arms on it and motor mounts and everything. And so that might be one to check out. We can get a hold of and get it put together and put it through its paces. That might be interesting. Hey, the other thing, Wayne, I know you might be interested in is, and I don't know, all of a sudden they've been big on these. Hobby King's coming out with a bunch of gliders, and not just like the cheap, you know, $100 gliders. They're coming out with some high-dollar, high-end gliders. And the first one I wanted to talk about should be on, which one you got there? That's
Telemann.
Yeah, the Telemann electric sailplane glider. And guys, check this thing out. It's got a full carbon fiber fuselage, V-tail, carbon fiber prop. I mean, this thing looks really well built. But again, you know, as of anything that's, you know, carbon fiber and very well built, they come with a price tag. But honestly, I don't think this one's bad. It is $433, but I think that's pretty good for what you're getting in it, and it looks pretty cool. And they got a couple more of them out. And another one was an Enthia electric warm liner. Same thing. Looks very well built. It's a little bit cheaper. excuse me, $366. And yeah, while you're there, we'll click on that one too. The other one they got coming out, I don't even know how you say this, the Perseus. Mm-hmm. Again, another new electric glider out from Hobby King. Looks pretty similar to the first one. All balsa build up wing, full carbon fiber fuselage, carbon fiber propellers, V-tail. Looks pretty well built, and it's running about $526. And what's the size on that? It's pretty good size too, I think.
2285
millimeter on the wingspan. Does it say what the weight is on it by chance?
950 grams.
950 grams. See, that's a pretty good glider. Well built, lightweight. Yeah, that's something I would definitely be interested in. Just one, let's see, a couple other things here real quick. They released, if we go back to their new items page, should be towards the top. They finally released the Cree Cree, the French twin-engine single-person airplane. You see it? There it is. Have you seen this, Pat?
I think we were talking about it last time.
Did we talk about it last time you were here? This is the most interesting airplane.
There's a video of it?
Yeah. They finally released it, and this is the craziest looking airplane. And, you know, they designed this off of the real airplane. You know, it was just a single seat, twin engine, French built airplane. And they decided to design one and produce one. And the thing is just crazy looking. Look at that, Mike. What do you think of that?
I don't understand it.
I mean, it's, you know, it's got them two engines way out on the front, these big exhaust stacks coming down along the side.
Well, the real airplane, you know what that design is for.
What's that?
That's going to get you to the crash site.
Oh. Oh, my gosh. I mean, I can't believe they, you know, someone actually built one of those and, you know, flew it around. But it's a neat. It's neat. Look, I'd be interested to see how that thing flies. I watched a little bit of the video on it. It's pretty quick.
They should have put a different backdrop instead of white on that, because it's hard to see.
Yeah. In the air, though, it didn't look too bad. But, yeah, that thing would crank around pretty good. So
it's pretty unique, though.
Isn't that?
Oh, I mean, I'll say.
Yeah. I don't think you will ever see one of those out and about anywhere, anytime soon, anyway.
What battery?
Yeah, what's, give us some specs on that a little bit.
Well, it takes a 3S 13 to 1500 milliamp battery. It's a 1050 milliamp.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
Nah.
What's the wingspan on that one?
1050.
Oh, all right. Yeah. So it's not real big, but it's
counter rotating props.
Yeah, counter rotating props. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. So
I don't know. I think it's ugly.
Well, that's the thing. It's so ugly. It's
unique.
Yeah, it's like kind of cool. Like,
well, I don't know, but I'd say cool.
I think it's kind of cool. Again, it is so ugly, but yeah. You know, and they kind of, you know, they got the big fake engines on them, and I mean, that thing's just neat looking. It definitely needs some kind of pilot figure or some. You got to have some crazy looking dude, you know, with his head sticking out of the canopy with a big scarf hanging out the back or something.
That might work.
Yeah.
I ain't buying it.
No?
I can't see me buying it.
And what's the price on that? I think it was like $150, right?
$140.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So, all right, guys. That's probably about it for the products page. Go check some of that stuff out. There's some really cool stuff coming out, and we're going to move along here. Now, I know I got quite a few tweets and emails and stuff about what's been going on lately with this FPV thing, and they were kind of wondering why we haven't talked about it. Well, we really just haven't had a chance or haven't had the time, but we definitely want to talk about it a little bit and discuss it and kind of wonder where this is going to go. You know, as far as most of us here around flight test, we do a lot of FPV flying. And as of, what was it, June 20, what was the date when that come out? The 23rd, I believe, or 24th. They issued that, like that mandate where they kind of rewrote the rules a little bit here. And I'm not going to, you know, go through and read everything about it, but it basically boils down to, if you have any kind of quadcopter, airplane, or anything, that now you have to fly line of sight. No FPV goggles or anything of that nature. And you got some notes on that?
Yeah, I've pulled up some information.
Good, let's hear it.
I've got, but, you know, the FAA is kind of jumping on the card here to regulate this and to kind of clarify some things. So I pulled some information up off of the FAA website, FAA.gov.
And right.
If you type in drones on their search engine, it'll kind of steer you around to a couple different things. But they've put out what they call a Federal Registered Notice, which mm-hmm. I think that's probably what the
right.
What the update there on RC Group's links to.
Right.
And a lot of information in here basically to kind of clarify what they consider to be an aircraft
mm-hmm.
and where model airplanes fit into that and where the FPV fits into that as well. And I think looking forward, they see a lot of potential problems with RC planes that can be flown out of sight.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, there is some risk there to namely to other airplanes.
Right.
As it gains popularity, I think you're just going to see more and more of the FAA trying to put out
mm-hmm.
some information to draw awareness to that so, mm-hmm. so they can regulate it.
I was kind of baffled, though, you know, with this going on, the FPV goggles, and obviously most of everyone here has at least tried it, and we know and understand it, but I'm kind of confused with the FAA. It seems like they just are going off, and I don't know, see if you agree, Wayne, just on what people are saying or what the media is saying or things that are going on, to where I think there's other stuff out there that they need to look at first. Now, again, my thing would be some of this long range stuff. Now, I love the long range stuff, and that's kind of first on my list. I'd love to put a long range system on an FPV glider and get up, you know, way up there and just cruise around thermaling. But I would think that the long range stuff would be something farther on their list to start with, to where, you know, these guys, some of these guys can go out 10, 12, 15 or and longer, you know, miles, you know, flying FPV. Why they would start with something as simple as you know, the goggles or the monitor or something like that. Any thoughts on that, or why the, you know, why are they going right for the goggles? And you know, I guess probably just because it, you know, if they state that it's line of sight, period, no matter what you got. You know, I don't know.
Well, I know, you know, when you, and I don't fly FPV, so I don't have an opinion one way or another,
mm-hmm.
but I know that just based on what I've seen, you know, you can get up there and obviously lose sight of your quad or,
sure.
or your aircraft
sure.
very easily. And without seeing that, you don't have that situational awareness of what's around you, what
mm-hmm.
what not only what you're flying towards. I mean, through your goggles you can see the direction that you're flying in
mm-hmm.
and what lays out there, but you really have no way of knowing what's on top of you, what's below you,
uh-huh.
to the left, to the right. And I don't think it's as much as of a risk of an FPV flying into an airplane as it is an airplane flying into an FPV
aircraft
or quad.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I, you know, and being kind of a pilot myself, I, you know, and I've talked about this before, I kind of understand that a little bit. It'd be pretty scary if you were flying around a Cessna at 2,500 feet and this quadcopter comes zooming in front of you or something. But here's the thing then, why not limit it, you know, keep the goggles and you know, let you fly FPV, but put a limit on it of some sort. You know, obviously, you know, 5 miles from the airport or whatever, and keep an altitude, say, I don't know, 800 feet or whatever. Make some limits to where you can still use it. You know, I don't understand the harshness of, you know, either line of sight or nothing at all. I think it's a little ridiculous in that terms. I don't see why they couldn't do a little bit more research in this. You know, maybe, you know, have some of these guys, I doubt if they have ever even put on goggles or tried it or anything like that, or seen the technological side of it, you know, and see what goes into these things. But I don't understand why, you know, they don't have some kind of limit or cap on it. You know what I mean?
Well, I know it's all pretty new. I mean, it's new, but it's not. I mean, you've had drones and things like that out there for quite some time. And the FAA put out this Federal Register notice, which it's open for a 30-day period,
right,
open for public comment. And I think the date, it was June 18th is when they turned this on for public comment. So you've got 30 days to comment on that. And this is a clarification to the FAA Modernization and Reform Act of 2012 is what I'm reading here. And it says, in this interpretation, the FAA clarifies that model aircraft must satisfy the criteria in the Act to qualify as model aircraft and to be exempt from future FAA rulemaking exemptions or rulemaking actions. It goes on to say, and if consistent with the Act, if a model aircraft operator endangers the safety of the national airspace system, the FAA has the authority to take enforcement action against those operators for those safety violations. So right there, they're saying that they're gonna hold not only FPV people, but people that don't follow these rules to some accountability if they endanger people, property, things of that nature.
Right.
You know, the body of this register notice goes on to say that, you know, the Modernization Act of 2012, basically it confirms that the FAA's longstanding position that model aircraft are aircraft, is what they say here.
Well, that's the problem, they say. But the thing is none of this has been approved by Congress. There's supposed to be a set thing in the rules and laws that state they have to go through procedures, voting, and these guys are circumventing the whole system. So how does that, you know, just because you can justify the ends doesn't mean you can just blast through there and throw out a bunch of rules and you start making regulations. Because I understand, like I said, somebody wants to put a quad through the cockpit of a 747, that's one thing. But there's checks and balances. They should have to go through the procedures.
Right. I mean, well, I don't think anybody, at least anybody in the hobby, would intentionally do something like that.
Oh, I agree. Right.
Oh, no.
But the concern is there. I mean, being in the industry, I see a lot of news articles and, you know, publication snippets where people have reported, you know, drones and this,
right,
and that, and where was it, New York or something, an airliner approach reported an F-4,
oh, yeah. Yeah,
you,
yeah,
know, or maybe in Florida or somewhere like that. So, I mean, you know,
they hope the negative things. So
well, that's
much,
the problem.
The media problems,
well,
too.
But how is it that they can regulate, like, if a farmer wants to fly over his crops, and, you know, or, you know, if a roofer wants to take a quad and go up there and check out a roof on a house, you know, how is it that they can justify blocking things like that? It's,
well,
this blanket ruling is a
that's
problem.
For commercial,
yeah, all or nothing.
Looking at that as for commercial purposes,
right.
and if they're equating model aircraft to full size aircraft, you know, to pilot an aircraft for compensation, you would have to have what, Chris?
A license.
A commercial
license
versus,
right,
a private license.
Right.
Private license, just like what they're saying here, flying over your crops to check on the crops, taking pictures of buildings because they're your buildings, is one thing. But if you incorporate that into your business to
make money,
or for compensation, that's considered, I guess, a commercial activity, which in the aircraft world is no different than not having a commercial pilot's license and taking someone up for $300,
right,
$400 to get them to, you know, to Chicago and back.
Right, right. I understand that point because I have the commercial license and everything. You know, I couldn't even get, you know, take money for rides until I had a commercial license, you know, of that nature. And you obviously, you know, you're in, but, you know, this is, I don't know how to say it, you know, this is, it's just a model, you know, I don't want to say toy, but, you know, we're so far at the other end of the spectrum with that, you know, than what they're really thinking. They're diving way too deep into that with it being compared to a real aircraft. Here's just a small example. You know, I think I just don't understand. And I'm not going to give away names and where I heard this and everything, but a very big television or network company used to use a lot of helicopters, you know, for their TV shows and such. And they had a couple incidents. You know, I actually think maybe a couple people might have died in the crash or whatever. So they got to the point where they didn't even want to deal with it, didn't want helicopters, didn't want anybody in them. Well, it came around to where this, you know, this copter thing is moving along so fast, and the technology and everything, they started using the copters for filming and doing things with their shows, and which for one was very cost effective. Two, nobody was in danger of anything like that. And the FAA was trying to shut them down on it, you know, because it's for commercial use and they're supposedly, you know, making money on it. I just don't see how they can justify, when you look into that, to where you're flying a full-size helicopter, you know, and you have the risk of possibility of hurting, you know, many more people in that instance, you know, where you have a, you know, I don't know, say a $5,000 quadcopter, you know, flying around, you know, shooting a few scenes. That I don't understand that, you know, how they can come up with something like that.
I mean, I went back and looked at some of the older regulations, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And back in 1981, the FAA put out what they call an advisory circular. And you can find this again on the FAA.gov website if you pull up. Oh, I think it's under regulations and then advisory circulars. AC 9157, and it's titled Model Aircraft Operating Standards, and it's just a one-page document that basically sets out modelers generally concerned about safety and exercise good judgment. However, model aircraft at times can pose hazards to full-scale aircraft in flight and to persons and property on the surface. Very brief document, you know, gives you some really good do's and don'ts. Select an operating site that is sufficient distance from populated areas. Do not fly the aircraft higher than 400 feet above the surface.
Right.
You know, give right away and avoid flying in proximity to full-scale aircraft. I mean, just kind of common sense.
Exactly.
Thing. But the thing is, this is dated. This guidance is from 1981.
Sure.
And a lot's happened between then and now, mm-hmm. especially in the model aircraft industry.
Right.
And now this explosion of accessibility to, I mean, the everyday person can go out and buy,
yeah.
you know, a GoPro and
right.
and a quad and
yeah,
go some, to town. So,
right.
you know, the FAA, they've got to kind of adjust their stance on this.
I totally agree with that. I think there definitely has to be some kind of boundary, but the way they're going about it, I think, is
banning it all.
That's not the answer. And the bad thing about it now, and I think you guys all agree, is they're gonna, you know, if they start with this, then where are we going to go from here? I think it, you know, if we don't fight for this, and you know, obviously the AMA is already involved with this, but if we don't try to get a grasp on this now, try to get it under some kind of control, it's just, I think, going to get way worse down the roads, you know, where we're limited, you know, we're not going to be able to go to parks and fly our airplanes, or you know, might even have trouble flying our airplanes on our own property if, you know, we're above 100 feet or something. I don't know, you know, it's just the fact that if it's this easy for them to do this right now and do what they're doing, I think down the road it could be really bad. Do you guys agree with that? Or,
well, yeah, I think mm-hmm. it's a power grab for one,
knee-jerk.
And I don't, yeah, it is a knee-jerk reaction,
right?
And
right,
I think it all needs to slow down. It needs to go through the procedures. I don't see where they have a right to come out there and just blast away and say we're making all the rules. No, this is something that needs to be voted on, run through slowly,
right?
Not a knee-jerk reaction, because that's, you know, what else this is going to destroy is sailplanes. 400 feet, that's not very high as far as sailplanes go.
Yeah, because we generally start out around 300 or 400 feet with a sailplane, you know.
But again, we're not flying off the end of
no,
you know,
no, no, no,
airport
no.
either. So
no, we're way out of the controlled airspace with that.
I mean, like, even with the quads, you know, like what Alex was doing down here in Georgia, you know, when he was flying through the woods and stuff.
Yeah.
Really? I mean, how that is not going to affect any kind of air traffic, period.
Right.
So, again, but it affects that. So this is where I say this is all crazy. That it needs to slow down, need to back up, come out with real, you know, if they're going to do this,
right.
One, do they have the right to do this? And two, if they have a right, and then make slow policies
right.
Instead of coming out there and banning everything.
Exactly.
And then making everybody else have to fight it back.
Right.
I mean, that's, it is. It's just, it's overreacting.
They're not looking at least from what I can see, what I've read here, they're not taking into consideration the difference of one person flying in between trees as opposed to someone else who's at, you know, 2,500, 3,000 feet. Now, there's a big difference there, and, mm-hmm. you know, sure, I'm sure the FAA is not concerned about an FPV quad crashing into a tree, but at the same time, the potential is there for that other FPV that's flying at 3,000 feet to do some serious damage.
Sure, and I mean, totally
you can,
agree
you
with
can
that.
You can do that with anything, though. You can sit there and over-exaggerate. I can take a four-wheel drive pickup truck and drive it through a crowded parking lot, you know, a playground, and kill a bunch of people. So we're going to ban all cars. You can't do this just shotgun blast, just get it all in one
shot.
You can't
just do
that. Do
geese get in planes or hit planes? Do they do damage? Should we just shoot them all? And,
I mean, well, no, like, you're not allowed to shoot
geese.
Oh,
I know. It's better protected.
The thing is, you have to mitigate some of that risk. And you know,
goose weighs way more than what my plane does.
Well, what's an average quad with a camera and an FPV? What are we talking about weight-wise here?
2 or 3 pounds.
Yeah, I would say that.
Yeah, they're not... There's
right.
no weight to them. I mean, they're not that big. They're not that heavy.
So the largest quad that you see anyone flying out there for hobby purposes to capture video.
Oh, Chad's could probably, you know, you can get a hex
copter.
You can get a hex or something.
Yeah.
It weighs
but,
4 or 5 pounds.
Yeah,
even.
But here's the thing. The guys that have, say, $10,000 to $15,000 wrapped up in some serious video equipment, they're not – they're 200 feet off the ground, or maybe, you know what I'm saying? These guys are professionals, and they're not, you know, like you said, the problem we're going to run into was somebody's got $1,200 burning in their pocket that runs out and buys a DJI Phantom that has absolutely no experience, puts a battery in, fires this thing up, and just takes off and goes, you know, 3,000 feet or whatever. And I agree with you, Pat, just for the reason that, you know, being a pilot and everything from what I know, but I just, you know, put some kind of cap on it to start with, or say, you know, if you're caught at 1,500 feet or 2,000 feet or anything that happens, guess what? You know, you got a $20,000 fine, 10 or 5 years in jail or something to affect it. It's going to make somebody think before they do something
stupid. And I'm not advocating anything one way or another. Like I said, I'm not involved in the FPV.
Right.
I'm just kind of... You know, I mean, this is a pro RC group, including me.
Right.
I'm just trying to play a little bit of
devil's advocate since you're in the aviation side. And I totally agree with you, 100%.
And, you know, to answer your question about geese, I mean, I've got a little bit of perspective there as well. Now, obviously, geese weigh a little more than an FPV.
Yeah.
But really, when you're up there, it doesn't matter how much you weigh, you can still create some damage.
Sure.
Well, and then they're playing on a fear factor, too, where, okay, you know, there's somebody out there looking inside my bedroom window.
Right.
Well, you know, that's already illegal, so you don't need more rules and laws because that's
Wayne,
already
you know
illegal.
What? I never needed an RC airplane to do that before.
But these are things that the media
is
picking up on now is because this is sensationalism.
Right.
Let's make a big thing out of it. And so every idiot out there that wants to make a name for himself is now going to do something just to stir the pot.
Well, here's a real life scenario. You know, picture yourself out there flying an FPV. What's the range on something you would fly? Out of sight. I mean, that you couldn't see.
They could go a mile and a half.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So you're 4 miles from the airport or 5 miles from the airport.
Mm-hmm.
You're tooling around. You don't see your quadcopter. Airplanes on approach to the local airport, mm-hmm. maybe he's two miles out, 3 miles out, 2,500 feet. You may not know he's behind you.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, same thing with geese. Okay, now you can't do anything to control geese, but there are countermeasures in place at airports where they try to scare them away with
the bangs,
the shotgun thing, yeah. bangs, right. things like that.
Open
right?
season.
But it's that's nature. But yeah. but the kind of damage a goose can do, kind of damage a goose has done on a low altitude, you know, 2,500 feet to an aircraft. Is right there is a good example.
Ooh, that's pretty gnarly. Wow. I went right through the side of that thing.
You know, and now this type of airplane, a corporate type airplane, these photos I have here, are kind of built to withstand that.
Mm-hmm.
But if this was a Cessna 172 with a
right.
plexiglass
yep.
windshield, even though he may have been going a third of the speed of this aircraft, mm-hmm. that's still going to do some pretty good damage.
Right, right.
And, you know, if it's an airplane or a quadcopter and one of these airplanes comes up from behind, you're never going to know it with the goggles.
Right, right, right. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I know we've talked about it before, even, you know, if like a guy's tooling around at 1,500, 2,000 feet and say something hits the prop, you know, it may break it off and damage it enough to where he's got to shut it down,
sure.
you know, because it's out of balance and he's got to put it down in the field. Again, you know, I see both sides of it. I don't understand why they're going this
you know,
extreme.
You know, my impression with all this rulemaking and comments and things like that is that they're trying to avoid a situation mm-hmm. where something like that happens. And a lot of times, you know, from just watching television, the government, it's usually overkill. And
right.
And they just rush to get something done, and then...
Well, the problem with this is it will not stop the stuff we're talking about.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Those people aren't going to follow the rules anyways.
No,
this is only going to affect those of us that are sitting in this room, the people that are listening to this podcast. Those are the only ones it's going to affect. The idiots that are out there
are still
idiots. They're still
going to
do it.
It's the same thing with general aviation.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the FAA can only take away someone's license if they have a license. If they're flying around out there with no license,
yeah. they can't do anything with it.
Yeah. You know, if they hurt someone.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
but that's my biggest pet peeve is this is going to affect those who just want to fly that aren't going to be flying, you know, out and doing dumb stuff. You know, it's
well, and I think that's where us as hobbyists, you know, we have an obligation to be safe and to use common sense and to not
right.
You know, like you said, it only takes one or two people.
Yeah.
With a laser pen to create regulation for the millions of other people that have laser pens that don't shine them up in the cockpit.
Right.
You know, it only takes one person who's trying to chase an airplane or a glider or a hot air balloon. I remember several years ago when I lived out in California, right, driving up to LAX, right on the right side of the 405 freeways, Goodyear flight operations. They had a blimp. The Goodyear blimp was anchored out there in Carson, California. And they didn't have a hangar for it. It was just anchored right off the freeway. Well, you know, I forget what year it was, but they were hunting and searching for whoever it was that flew an RC airplane into the side of the blimp.
Oh, man.
I didn't read or I don't recall any kind of damage that was done. The thing was just sitting on the ground, but that was a big, big deal.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's before, you know,
yeah.
electronic flight
yeah.
and before digital, you know. So
yeah. Who knows
and,
what?
And, you know, most of the, I mean, back then, right, it wasn't easy to, at least when I first tried it, it wasn't easy just to pick up one of those airplanes and be proficient with it like it is now.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, at my great skill level now, if I tried to pick up a gas-powered RC,
uh-huh.
it'd be all over, you know,
right.
and the money would be gone.
Yeah.
So whoever did that back then, they knew what they were doing.
Exactly.
And what did that do to everyone else in that area? Because there were flying parks out there. And
right.
It made everybody look bad. So, yep. you know, we have a responsibility to kind of police ourselves. And you know, the government's going to do what the government does. Right?
Yeah.
But We just have to make sure that we're, you know, we're not contributing to issues that are going to create more problems for us.
Yeah, but I think we're going to have to fight back.
I agree.
To get, you know, this.
Well, and that's why they allow for a comment period.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how they get input. That's how they know that, look, don't lump us in.
Yeah.
With bad behavior. Yeah. And, you know, I've got somewhere else in here where they, it was this Federal Register notice from back in 2006 when this first started coming out. They even went as far as to, you know, they said all unmanned aircraft is a device that is intended to be used for flight in the air with no onboard pilot. Well, that's a broad brush. So at least here back then, they classified it into unmanned aircraft systems operating as public aircraft, like your drones that fly around and launch predator missiles or, you know, missiles and things like that. Then they separated it down a little further for a classification for unmanned aircraft for agricultural flights and things like that, and they broke it down to recreational sport use of model airplanes.
Oh, gotcha.
So they're, even back then, they weren't saying, well, even though a model airplane is an unmanned aircraft, technically, that's not the same thing as a Global Hawk drone flying over in Afghanistan.
Right.
So
now, I read through this, and you know, just kind of in lawyer terms and everything. But do any of you guys know for sure? Like now that they have this set, you know, we have this 30 days. Is this actually? It's not set in stone yet, though. Correct.
The FAA. They will things like this when they do their rulemaking, whether it's to change something in the FARs or to issue an airworthiness directive against an airplane or anything they do, they open up a public comment period.
Uh-huh.
And this is your opportunity to go on, and like I said, you can go on to FAA.gov and search drones. NRC Groups has links to where you can go, and you can make comments, and you can voice your concerns, your anger, whatever you have.
Right. Which I know, you know, a lot of people are doing. You know, the AMA went, you know, commented about it, and Ready Made RC has been, in, you know, they're heavily involved in it. But I guess I'm just was wondering, you know, what's going to happen after the 30 days? You know, is this something they can, you know, set some kind of guidelines, though? Or is this, you know, what I'm trying to say, is this set in stone as of now, though? Or is this something that can change a little bit, you know, after the 30 days? Or are they going to reevaluate it, or, you know?
Well, where it goes after the comment period, I'm not really, you know, sure.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been involved a lot in contributing to comments and things like that. So
no one seems to really know. I've asked a few other people, too.
I don't know.
Well, I'm just what I mean. It just seems to be very vague at this point of where what direction this is going. I've talked to some other people, too, about it, and they're like, well, it's kind of, nobody really knows if this is actually set in stone at this point in time.
So I better fly a lot right now.
Yeah, maybe you should.
I just got everything set up with my goggles, and then I hear this stuff coming in the door.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, and I kind of feel bad too for some of these. You know, I just read a report. I'll see if I can even pull it up on Twitter. Read something too that, you know, the FAA is really going to start cracking down on these realty companies and these farmers that are out, you know, checking their fields and stuff. I just, it baffles me.
Again, I think that goes back to what we were talking about earlier
they
want to separate commercial use from non-commercial use the same way they are for larger full-scale airplanes.
Right, and somebody on RC Groups made a really good point. They were like, okay, so say somebody goes out and they take a bunch of video and pictures, you know, of, say, a vacation or something, and a year down the road they turn around and sell them. What are they going to do? You know, or can they come after that person? You know? Something to think about, you know? I don't know. It seems pretty vague at this point. I don't know.
Well, you know, they always say write your congressman. Well, this is a you know, an opportunity for your voice to be heard, is to go on to the docket there and comment. And you know, you also can contact your local FAA office. And again, if you go to FAA.gov, the United States is divided up into several districts.
Right.
They're called FSDOs, Flight Standards District Offices.
Uh-huh.
Our nearest one is up in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, every FSDO has a contact sheet, an office phone number. And you can talk to any safety, airworthiness inspector, maintenance inspector, and find out what the feel is in the local office there of your geographic area. See what their take on it is.
Yeah,
I think, you know, the more awareness there is, and the more proactive comments and things like that that come from this community. Will only improve the situation.
Right.
It's if you do nothing, you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're all, I think, afraid of. So.
But this is the time for everybody to stop just sitting around the table and complaining about it.
Right.
And actually do something about
it. Exactly.
Because you can sit there and complain all day long.
You're right.
Well, right. That public comment period, I think, is probably over on the July 18th.
Yeah, somewhere right around there. Yeah.
Did they have something besides commenting, like voting, or I don't know? I didn't go to.
You see,
site.
That's the. I don't know. I think that's where the part of the problem is, because Congress just passed the rules that said they didn't want all this stuff getting swept into the FAA. Well, the FAA is coming around with their own rules. Where, see, I don't see how they could pull this off.
Yeah, and I'll be honest. You know, I thought. At least for the, you know, FPV community and even the hobby community, after Trappy actually won the suit, you know, that the FAA had against him that was ongoing for a couple of years, and he actually won that, I really thought things were going on the upside with this and we're going to get better, but obviously not. So I don't know. Well, anybody else have anything else they want to add to this, or thoughts or comments or anything like that? No. All right. The only other thing I wanted to touch on before we get out of here was on RC Group's tooling around there, reading on some stuff, and I was kind of blown away at some of these clubs and stuff that are also getting away from the, well, as they call them, drones, or the quadcopters and the tricopters. There's several posts in there that some of these guys that have been flying, you know, copters there for 2, 3, 4 years, and they get a guy in there who makes one complaint, and now they're throwing them out of there, and they're not, you know, not allowed to fly anymore. And I was really kind of shocked about that, you know, that they're doing this. So I don't know. I don't know what to think about this.
That's disappointing to hear that.
Right, right. You know, and one guy on RC Groups, he was really upset. He did a lot of, you know, video and aerial photography for the guys flying, you know, would share the video and everything, and everybody seemed to enjoy it, and then it just took one grumpy old man to say I don't like it, and he shouldn't be flying a drone, and you know, the board threw him, you know, said no more, either get rid of it, or
it almost seems like minority rules anymore, I feel. I don't understand it.
Well, there's a lot of politics in it too, and if this person that complained has been a member of this group forever, and then they're going to listen to them, you know, instead of embracing the next generation, these are going to be the same groups that go down in flames because of the fact that
they're not
the only
changing.
People that are members are 80-year-old old men that are grumpy and never smile anymore.
Yeah.
And they won't have any new blood coming in, and then they'll go down.
Right.
So what you'll do is like, okay, fine, I'll just pack up and move somewhere else.
Yeah,
so.
Start my own club or something. You
right.
Know. Yeah. So it's crazy, and it, you know, be aware, guys, it's out there. A lot of stuff happening going on with this stuff, so you got to stay involved and, you know, let everybody know what's going on out there. So, well, I don't want to be a downer too much. I know it's a hot topic out there right now, and I really think we needed to discuss it a little bit and, you know, get the feelers out there and see where everybody kind of stands. Mike, did you have anything? I know you had a little notepad over there.
I think I kind of got my points in.
You sure?
Off and on. I know a guy at work, though, said that on Yahoo that all national parks banned.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was on Yahoo News a couple, like 3 hours ago, you know, today. And then there were some older articles when I dug in on it.
Right, right. Yeah.
And it's definitely hitting the headlines.
And
everywhere.
That's a funny thing, too. I know a lot of some of these flying fields and clubs and stuff are in national parks. So, yeah, they got shut down, which is, you know, a big bummer. You know, now those guys are looking for somewhere else.
I will share one thing, I guess.
Yeah, go ahead. Sure.
It's kind of, I was reminiscing some over the weekend when I was working with Chad Capper. We were sitting on his basement floor like day one. That was pretty cool because I'm like, how are we on the floor? We were balancing my props. I'm like, boy, this brings back memories from 5 years ago.
No
before
kidding.
He even had flight test and
yeah.
stuff. I'm like, this is unbelievable.
Oh,
and then when
funny.
He first got his laser cutter, we were real eager to
I remember that.
To cut like everything we could find. So I gave him my belt.
Are you serious?
We were real careful. We put the flight test logo and the little gremlin on there, and we thought we had everything figured out perfectly. It was between my loops and stuff. I mean, this is how dorky I am. But anyways, I put it on. Well, it was upside down. So ever since then, I've been putting my belt on the left side.
You got to be kidding me.
Like, I don't know if girls do that or not, but I'm like, they have the logo upside, right? We get a kick out of it every time. He's like, and then someone at work noticed. He's like, are you left-handed because your belt's? I'm like, how did you even notice that? Who notices people's belts?
You know, that's a funny story the first laser cutter he got was, I think I was at work that day, and it showed up on the truck over at Stonecap,
yes,
you know, and
yes.
he was freaking out. Yeah, he was freaking out because they didn't know how to get the thing off the truck.
I think
he's like, Chris, I don't know. He called me over. I don't know what to do. We got to get it. I said, well, I'll tell you what. There's Sunbelt Rentals over there. I said, call and get a forklift. I'll try to get out of work early. I said, I'll be down. And
awesome.
Luckily, I did and went down there and got the forklift, and we got that thing unloaded and down over the hill. I was a little nervous dragging that thing down over that hill to try to get it in the garage, and, you know, forklift, you know. But we got it in there.
That's funny.
He was like a kid in a candy store trying to get that thing unloaded.
And I did. And last podcast, I wanted to really thank Josh, too, Josh Bixler, because I go out to this flying field, especially last year, like every Thursday, and he helped set up probably over half my planes for me, like the maidens and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I really want to send a thank you. I said thank him every time I see him, but it's just he was so nice and personable. And
uh-huh.
You can't appreciate that enough in this hobby.
I mean,
without that, it's just nothing.
Hey, I'm going to throw Alex's dad under the bus here a little bit. I got a phone call from his dad, Steve Savada, here a couple days ago, and he says, Chris, I had a little problem. And I'm like, yeah, Steve, what's going on? He goes, well, Alex brought me one of the ultra micro radians out, and man, I love that thing. I was out cranking around and got in a nice big thermal, and he goes, it went up.
In a way. Please tell me he didn't lose an entire plane like
he did.
I did. I thought I was the only one that did that.
He
oh,
lost
my
it.
Lord.
It was gone. He said he got into a real heavy thermal, and it got just up to the point he didn't know where.
Like I told you, when we were doing thermals, I caught one, and I was driving it down.
Right.
And you guys were doing your
DLGs. Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my gosh. I was getting in that scenario.
Was that unbelievable, with the
ultra micro radio?
Oh, that's so funny.
And I was getting lift, like, and I wish you guys would have been there, because I just said, get over here. But then I'm like, I was just constant down
trying to get it down.
I'm like, I got to come down. I can barely see it.
Oh, that's funny. So he was all bummed out.
I can see that happen.
He went like the next day and got another one.
At least they're not overly expensive.
Yeah.
So
he's like, I got another one. I'm ready.
The one I lost was a Kinetic, which was, I mean, it's back then it was a little more expensive. It might have come down. Well, they don't even make it now, but I see some copies of it.
Yeah.
Identical. Actually, I think it was Value Hobby had an exact copy of it.
Yeah. Yep. You're right.
So
that's funny. So I figured I'd throw Steve under the bus
funny.
A little bit.
Yes, and then, I like hearing that story.
And then poor Steve, he got the big carbon cub, you know, and finally got it together. Well, first, this poor guy, I feel bad. I'm throwing Steve under the bus, but he went to put the wing on, or something happened, and they broke the strut, like, before they even got to fly. And, of course, the strut was on back order for, like, 3 weeks or whatever, and he finally got the strut, and he got it all put together. And then I believe him and Alex went out, and they did a few flights with it and had a few mishaps and crashes, and then they borrowed it for the the Carbon Cub episode for flight tests, and then poor and Peter was flying it, and they were doing the limbo, and I mean, he just ate it. That thing went under there and rolled over. Did you see it sitting there? I mean, just ripped it right off. I'm like, poor Steve, he just can't win here lately.
I think they said they were going to compensate him for
that. They're gonna give him the other one.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But still, you know,
you can feel for that.
But well, I think that's about anything else. Did you have anything else, Mike?
No, nothing at all. Yeah, sure? I shared my little stories. Thank you.
All right, no problem. Well, I think we've been rattling on here for quite a while, and we could probably go on for a little longer, but I think we're all ready to get out of here and go home, get some food, and, you know, relax a little bit. But everybody out there, we just really appreciate you guys listening. It seems to be we get a few more followers every week, and it's growing. And we enjoy doing this. And actually, I'll give you a little tidbit. We got some interviews coming up with some pretty cool people here in the next couple weeks. So if you hang in there and let us know what you think. If you like some of that, we'll keep doing a little more of that. So it should be fun and interesting. And once again, thanks, guys, for coming in here, hanging out. I love having the full house in
here. I love sharing stories. So
that's a lot of fun. And you guys out there listening, any questions, comments, emails, anything you want, whatever, hit me up on Twitter at FT After Hours, and shoot me an email at chris@flighttest.com. I love to hear from you guys, and enjoy answering your questions and hearing from you on Twitter. So other than that, I think we're done, and we're out of here, and we're going home. So
goodbye, everyone.
See you guys.
We'll see you guys later.
See you.